Ebony?
Hey, Johnny.
What would you like to...
Curtis, how you doing?
Good.
Would you like to say anything this wonderful September day?
You know what? Just thank you all for hanging in so far. I'm really excited about a lot of the feedback that we've gotten. Thank you for Johnny. I remember you mentioned on the call something to the effect of needing to take a pill to get some of this done, but you know, thank you for, you know, doing the hard work to get you to the next level. That means a lot. And I think it's going to be worth, you know, every moment of your time invested in doing this. So thanks everybody. Rob, I'll let you take it from there.
All right, thanks, Ebony. well, this is, excuse me, this is week 8, and week 8 is when we transition. This is the final week of organization, and coronavirus has given us lots of opportunities to build our character as we've been thrust into homework, working from home and educating and becoming teachers and coaches of our children and everything else. But hopefully you've had a chance to get your book somewhat segmented, somewhat organized. You're working with a schedule with your best clients and you're getting some good feedback. So why don't we go around? I always start out every call with what's on your mind. This is a kind of a group call. So the sharing probably won't be quite as open as it sometimes is. But I'm happy to give anybody an opportunity to share anything that they'd like before we get into some of the work. So what's on your mind this wonderful day? September 9th. Amazing.
Hey, I have some pills, Johnny. These are Centrum Silver 50s.
An extra hour in the day.
Why is it so sweaty?
Okay, what's somebody was breaking up on us, Rob.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it. Yeah, it was not clear.
Well, Lisa's in my upper left-hand corner. Lisa, you want to start with anything that's on your mind regarding the program and how's it going and that sort of thing?
Sure. And I feel like mine and Johnny's technical skills, again, are challenged. That's he tried to say earlier that he wished he had an extra hour in the day.
Okay.
That was what we'd all like to have because our time challenge issues continue, and we feel like the progress we've made has been substantial, but there's so much more to get done to really be where we're supposed to be in week 8, week 9, but I feel like the next couple of weeks are actually on my part as far as the scheduling. And that's my biggest challenge right now.
Okay. All right. Maybe do we want to respond, Rob, on the time challenges and, you know, just really starting to come to grips with the scheduling?
I'm always one that loves to hear some positive feedback too. If somebody has you know, they've worked their, they've got their schedule going, they're talking to clients, and the clients are turning over more money, or they've given them a referral, or they've done more business, or they just feel more organized. I'd love to hear about that too, because that makes the coach feel good, which is a good thing.
I'll share real quick. This is Stefan. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I'm in just dial-in mode. I'm in the car, and I'm going to have to jump around 2:30 to pick up the kids, so I apologize on the conflict. But just to your point, Rob, some good feedback. Had a call with a client this last week or two on a monthly touch that no way I probably would have had that same call in the old days. And they've decided they're going to fire their other manager. It's about a $3 million other account, where, you know, not guaranteed that it will definitely get to me, but, to be able to get in front of it immediately, and, you know, present my pitch, why he should consolidate and how low I can price those assets for him. I mean, I think that's invaluable because I probably would have heard about it. Oh, well, I've opened up this account elsewhere, you know, on the next quarterly call or something. So I thought that was good.
It's really good.
Yeah. Very good. Really good.
Yeah, I always tell the story about a FA that was very good about making his quarterly calls. And during the quarter, his client sold his business, was called by Goldman Sachs, transferred his account to Goldman Sachs, and proceeded to, over the next 4 years, lose all his money. Okay. So not only did he lose the account and lose the revenues, but he fell into the hands of people that were less than his best friends, okay? And ended up making private equity deals and really stupid decisions. And $5 million went down the tube. And this was a family that I knew very well. And had referred them to a financial advisor in my office. And, unfortunately he was one of those people that was easily influenced by the brand, and he just really wasn't educated on the market and was sucked in by, events. And it turned out, I mean, it just solidified in my mind why 1242 is so important, because a lot goes on in a month. Just stick around the stock market for 20 minutes and you know what I'm talking about. Things are moving so fast today. It's unbelievable. So what we could have comfortably felt we didn't need to call somebody quarterly, now that a whole world goes on in 3 months. As we know from coronavirus, right? The whole world has changed. I guess it's never been quite as apparent as it is now with coronavirus and how much our world has changed. Interestingly enough, how much of that is going to be permanent and how much is temporary? And, you know, how much will you keep doing some of the things that you created as positive rituals for yourself that you wouldn't have been able to do before this? So I think there's going to be some really wonderful things that come out of this for all of us, but it's certainly very disruptive. How about anybody else? Challenges or good things or just some general feedback?
I can add a little bit on the 1242. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
I had a call today from a prospect that I met with, I guess it was last November maybe, and didn't get the deal at all, and but he phoned me back today, and I was very confidently able to explain to him the 12-4-2, which I didn't before. I did explain my service model the first time, but I think it's given me some confidence, although I knew how to do 12-4-2, but not to be able to explain it in about 3 minutes real quick to this guy. And he's one of those that gives you about 5 minutes, and he's going to leave you after the fourth minute, you know. But I caught his attention, and, you know, I certainly don't have it yet, but I think it enhanced the call there, and I'm looking to get that account soon.
Yeah, we're just all looking for that way of differentiating ourselves, and these are things that are important to the client. And just remember that when we talk about that, there's three aspects that really are important to the client. One is planning, and they may not say that planning is important to them, but they know planning is important to them. And what does planning represent? It represents the fact that you hear them, you listen to them, and you know them. Those are critical to client satisfaction. Those are three reasons people leave us. The fourth is failure to communicate. So when we do a financial plan and you take the notes and listen to them and interview them for that, you're giving them a personal experience that they won't share again for a long time with anybody else, because it's hard work. And you're really opening yourself up when you share your facts about your life. People are very private. So that's important. You hear them, you listen to them, and you build a plan that's customized for them. And then you implement it through 12 scheduled appointments. And keep in mind, that's what we're really doing. We're not just touching them. We're implementing their financial plan on an ongoing basis. So the plan becomes dynamic. And the final piece is rapid response to their problems. 1 hour response, 24 hour resolution. Don't leave that off. Because it sounds good, it is good. And people say to me, well, how can I do that? I said, you're already doing it. Just make sure the clients understand that rapid response means when you call 911, you want rapid response. This is your version of 911. So when they call you, that means we're on full alert. You've got a problem, we're going to solve it. 1 hour response, 24-hour resolution, unless, of course, it's going to take a week, and then we're going to tell you it's going to take a week, and we're going to call you back when it's done. Now, no one does that. No one tells them how long it's going to take and then calls them when it's done. So by doing that, you're going to train your client. We're going to be calling you once a month. We're going to be seeing you. We're going to respond to your questions and your problems. If it's a question, please write it down in your folder and we'll discuss it on your monthly call. We'll make it part of the agenda. So just remind yourself to do those three things. So what are we offering? Multi-generational planning, implementing it through 12 contacts, and providing rapid response to your problems, 1 hour response, 24-hour resolution. It isn't just 12-4-2. It's easy to say 12-4-2, but the client really will get it, and it's part of your training process. So when they refer you, you want them to be able to articulate that. This is what they do for me. They do these three things for me. Planning, 12 contacts, rapid response to my problems. Train them. It's just part of the spaced repetition. You got to just keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. Then when you get referred in, they'll say, oh, you're the guy that does these three things. Wow, that's terrific. And that's how you'll differentiate yourself in the market. But good. Use those tools to differentiate yourself in all competitive situations. By the way, one of the things to say is, these are the three things we do. How does that compare to what you're getting now? And it opens up a great conversation. And it usually starts with, I haven't heard from my guy in 6 months. So you're really going to do this? Yes. How are you able to do that? Well, we have less than 100 clients. Wow. Okay. So it's like a concierge practice. Yes. Now, the group I met with earlier, just the group before you, we were talking about the chaos that they live in. And I said, yes, we're all living in chaos, right? They've got 11 estates to settle right now. They've got an older practice. So they've got 11 cases open of estates settling, which takes enormous amounts of effort and time, and you really don't get paid for it, right? You're lucky if you keep the assets. So how do you market in that world when you're underwater operationally? You schedule your centers of influence meetings. So we talk about 1242 for our clients, but we don't emphasize enough 1242 with our centers of influence. Anybody scheduling their 1242 centers of influence meetings? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Ebony, you did that the last time, didn't you? Bueller? Bueller?
I had a thought. We spent a couple hours Tuesday and a bunch of time yesterday doing the segmentation thing. We're a little bit behind, but that has been a huge help in terms of visualizing where our opportunity is. And we had a thought too, as we approach a client who calls us twice a year, plays his own trades. Every time I ask if he wants to talk further about anything else, like, no, I'm good. And I was just curious, like, once we start explaining to a client like that, we're going to contact you once a month. Do you find that, you know, it may just be he doesn't need anything, but it pays off to give him the touch. He's, you know, hey, just checking in on our monthly call. Is there anything, you know, these are my thoughts, anything you have, here's where we're at on your plan, here's your status. He's like, nope, I'm good. And it's still, I'm thinking it's still going to pay off just to touch everybody, because they're not going to get that from any other advisor.
Well, one of the things that you learn as a coach, which is what you become, is that you try and use open-ended questions and then closed-ended questions. Open-ended questions and then closed-ended questions. Because you're trying to get him to talk. So the first question you ask all the time when you open up any call is, what's on your mind? What else? Okay? So that you want him to talk. If you're talking, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. So get them to talk. So what's on your mind? The other thing is if you're able to create an agenda from his financial plan, you have the opportunity to, you know, go through the agenda. You also have your 24-month calendar where you have a topic that you're going to discuss. And with interest rates where they are, there's no one that's not interested in what they can borrow money at. Even if they don't plan on it, they're curious. It's kind of like, you know, what is my, you know, what, based on my credit rating, which no one knows what their credit rating is, or at least we don't, older people don't, young people do. So the question is, what can we borrow money at? Well, based on your equities that you have, you can borrow this amount of money at this rate. Wow, that's pretty cool. So just having a discussion on liabilities as part of your 1242 sequence is great. And then you get into risk management and all the different topics that we have for your 24-month calendar. We'll open him up if he has any money or any responsibilities or family to interesting discussion and generates probably some business along the way. So, good question, Kyle.
You know, Rob, let me piggyback on that as well.
Sure.
This is where the executive summary really is very, very useful as one of the tools in your arsenal. Because after each call that you have with the client, you're going to summarize, this is what we agreed to, this is what we discussed, this is maybe the direction we're going into, and these are the next steps by way of follow-up, and some of which we'll cover on our next call. So before you get off that call, you've already set up an agenda for the next call, and that's why that executive summary is so critical. It doesn't have to be long, but what you're doing is you're sending out that email with that summary, and then you're going to print it and stick a copy of it in your client file, and before you get on your next call with that client, there you are. You're opening up your file, your folder. You got the summary in there and some of the next steps for discussion. And you start your call as usual with, I have an agenda, but before I get started, is there something that's on your mind? And preposition the folder. You know, let your client know that, look, you might read something in Money Magazine, the Wall Street Journal, or another financial publication. If there's something that you don't understand or that you want to make an inquiry about, jot down a few notes and bring that to my attention on our next call so that you get that proactive involvement between you and the client. Okay, Bob?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always encourage you to do is always finish a call with next steps. Curtis mentioned it. What's our next step? What's our next step? Think in terms of never getting off a call without a next step. Something. Move it forward. Move the relationship forward with a next step. I had a rule that my time was valuable. And if I was going to call you, I planned on either doing some business or getting an introduction. Okay? And now that was just me, but I felt that my time was valuable and that I either was going to do some business or have an introduction. Now, with fee-based businesses, which we didn't have at that time, with fee-based businesses, you're getting paid for your time, but I still like the idea of next steps. Next step, where are we going? We're working our way through the financial plan. Where are we going? Next month, we're going to be talking about mortgages and liability management. So think about that. We'll be sending you this stuff. And I'd just like you to, you know, think through that. And boom, that's our next step. We're talking about liabilities. So it's all progressive, and it's all with a purpose. But it shouldn't feel like a sales call. It feels like it's about them all the time, not about us.
Okay. So I guess the idea is we're going from being the advisor for this portfolio that's at Morgan Stanley to the go-to life or financial consultant by just hitting every topic that could affect their financials, even if it's their home loan or their car loan, right, or what, it could be anything, but we become that go-to person for everything. And they have a monthly.
Yeah, you really become the consultant to the client. It's almost you become a life coach. in my mind, the full evolution of where you're going is to be a life coach for them in every aspect of their life. So when you build your list of enthusiastically endorsed professionals, it includes everybody that anyone would ever need. Think about that, right? It's the psychologist. It's the person that you call for an intervention for a child that has got a drug problem. I mean, literally anything. So it isn't, hey, let me know if I can do anything. It's, hey, I've got the name of the most enthusiastically endorsed professional in the business, in the area of your need. I've got the name of the best cardiologist in our business, in the business, and I can get you in if you want an introduction. Okay? So we're being proactive, and we're a connector to the world for them. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to produce any benefit to us at all, except we're connecting and solving a problem for our client. So putting two clients together, putting a client together with one of our professionals, it's all a benefit to the client or to the professional or to both, which then benefits you. So you become a center of influence for the clients. You're the guy they call when they've got a problem. And therefore, you can't have 600 clients. You can have 70 clients, or 100, or 50. And that's the difference between a family office group and a broker. Okay? So you become more like a family office group to a group of 70 wealthy people. And the key is that they be wealthy because they're the ones with the issues. They're going to have all the normal family issues, but they're going to have issues associated with wealth. And that's where the fun comes in for you guys, because it's boring to have a $500,000 rollover. That's no fun. A $20 million client with, you know, a bunch of businesses and a family office or a family and a dynasty trust and a family office group, you know, I mean, just all kinds of interesting things that they have that make them good for you. So estate planning becomes important, and so you become brilliant at it, and then you can really help them. So, any questions on agendas or, this is the week for agendas and what you put into an agenda, how you think through the agenda, et cetera. Establishing the value of your brand, and then the final is making use of proper use of your time. Where is your time going versus where you spend it without spending? Okay. So Kyle, did you do the par with Kyle's team?
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that. We finished ranking every single client yesterday. So I'd like to reconnect maybe tomorrow and learn to use some of the filters and the sorts more effectively. I'm not the best with Excel, but we did power through that, and it's a big help.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm curious how some of the other teams that are a little further ahead of us have adjusted their numbers, because it's really cool how you can choose, I want 30 A's, 30 B's, and 20 or 40 C clients, you know. How have you guys adjusted to picking those different sections and numbers once you see the time allocation that causes, I guess?
Charles, how did your team use that tool, or have you, or the PAR tool, or where are you on this?
I can't speak for myself. Tyler or Miranda would have to talk about that. I haven't used the tool. I like my own tools, honestly, so I've adopted a lot of the stuff, and I love it, but I can't get my head around that. So that's where I'm at.
Where are you in terms of the number of clients and 1242 and just getting organized?
Yeah, so I've segmented my I begin speaking for myself. I think every Tyler and Stefan and Miranda are kind of working concurrently with this. I had kind of 80 plus clients, so I've segmented that down to 60 and transitioned those. And, you know, I've got a few things I'm working on now, and if those happen in terms of new assets, I'm probably going to look to take it to 40 or 50.
Awesome. Way to go!
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I love the process. It's a lot of work, like trying to get this client folder ramped up, and I'm working on that and how I can do it through Digital Vault with the team. It's just tedious. I mean, the only time I have to work on that is at night, you know, from 9 to 10:30. So it's tough.
So Charles, you were just segmenting your particular book, right? Not that of the greater collective.
Correct.
Yeah. So Kyle, the difference for you is Rob was talking about the PAR data tool, but also the segmentation stuff. Charles is working on one subset of their greater collective because they're multiple trade IDs. What you're doing, Kyle, is going through the entire book. So a little bit more labor intensive and maybe a slightly different exercise. So, just wanted to kind of note that in terms of synergies, your experience is going to be a little bit different because you were doing what is really a much more arduous task. So I'm really proud of you, though, for you guys getting through that in one day. That's fantastic. That was a lot of work.
My fingers were sore at the end. But, yeah, I guess that's where we're struggling is just the quantity. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 400 plus to 600 total true clients, and it's just been tough to really – the tool is very helpful in wrapping a tangible way to look at it, but it's just a mountain of – it's just a lot. We're not going from 80 to 60. We're going from 600 plus to, we're not even sure yet, because we've got, you know, it's just a lot to give up. But that's why I asked.
Yeah. Just the awareness is worth a lot of money to you. Just the fact that you know where your time is going and where you're getting paid and where you're not getting paid. It's just an awareness. It's shining a light on the practice, which says, you know, this is smart. This is great. This makes no sense. So it just, you know, it's impossible to do it unless you shine a big, bright light on it.
So Keith, we'll, or I'm sorry, so Kyle, we'll get back with you and Keith to finish the other part of that. So thanks. Good job.
Yeah, and that was helpful too, because it's like, hey, if we scroll down this list, where does the revenue drop below, say, 10,000? And it's like, whoa, that's not a large number. Okay, what if we look under 5,000? You know, it's just really helpful to see. It's not as many accounts as you'd think, but we do have a ton that are on the lower end. It's just it's a matter of how many do we get rid of, and it's emotional too. But, very helpful.
Well, it's usually, in this day and age, it's when I take on a new team, they've generally already gone through this once or twice. And this is the way, you know, what you're going through, Kyle, is what it used to be like, you know, when we'd look at a practice initially. And it would have 600 clients, and you'd be like, wow. And you end up with, you know, 200 really good clients. And then you make a decision as to, is that the practice you really want to have? or do you want to have a, you know, a bigger practice and hire another person? And what we find is the economics of hiring that third person or that fourth person generally is not worth it. So when you think about the value of those clients, think about, okay, if we hired a person and we paid them, you know, $70,000 to manage the accounts and all in, it would cost us 100 grand. What's the revenue generated from that? And do we make money on that? Or is that just a break even, or do we lose money? So that's where it becomes a business decision rather than just an emotional challenge. So when you get to that point, kind of put pen and pencil to it and say, wow, okay, there's a cost to doing business. There's a cost, you know, what is it if you lose one of your top 10 clients because you don't have time for them, because you're spending so much time with the bottom 300, what's the cost of losing that top 10 client? And unless you do 12-4-2, you're going to be at risk of losing one of those top 10 clients or top 20 clients or top 40 clients. So what we found was that it just, you're going to lose clients. The question is, who's in charge of that? If you fire them, you lose the ones you want to lose. If you don't, then you're going to lose the ones you don't want to lose, because there's no way you can. I mean, the case of my other client just before you guys was 11 estates, right? 11 estates are settling. And they, one of them had $20,000 with them. So, I mean, that's crazy world, right? So you can't afford, and you say, well, they don't take any time. Well, those 11 states take time, okay? And they take tax time, and they take time from your assistants. So the reality is it takes time. So when you look at the revenues, just know that those revenues don't represent the real cost. You know, that's not the real net profit. The profit is, you know, we consider 6.5 hours the minimum amount of time it takes for each client. So what's the cost of 6.5 of your hours? And at what point does, you know, does a client, is a client profitable for you?
And Rob, it's also that concept that you mentioned, even beyond the revenue that the, you know, you're lacking, or the opportunity cost of having the wrong clients there. It's also your ability to sustain client satisfaction in providing an exceptional experience, because you're, as you always say, only as strong as your weakest level of service. And so if you're not able to provide that service to every person, or to deliver on the standard of care that you've outlined, then it's more than just the revenue, your whole book's at risk.
Well, and in reality, what is your brand? You know, you can talk about your value proposition, but the client doesn't care about that. What they care about is what it means to them. I don't care how smart you are, or what degrees you have, or what certifications you have. They want to know, what is going to be my experience in interacting with you? Are you a good surgeon? Yes. You must have credibility, and you must be good at what you do. But beyond that, what's my experience going to be? And if you don't call me, or I don't know when you're going to call me, then I make up what my experience is. You know, and we always said the clients are tough taskmasters. We had the usual model is, call me if you need me. Right? And the bad news is they call. And there's no discipline about when they call. So they eat up your time. Any questions on the 8th week work that we, about what what constitutes an agenda or what constitutes a review or a call or.
Hey, Rob, I had just a quick question on that. In the workbook, it mentions that you should have CSA call to confirm a week ahead of time. Are you finding that, do they really need to be calling or just sending an email the week ahead of time to confirm? Or
good question. We love Outlook calendar and Outlook appointments. So if you can send an Outlook appointment and get that confirmed and include an agenda so they don't think it's just some random email, if you get them to confirm it, then that's all you need. So you can send that as far in advance as you want to, as long as you get a response. If you don't get a response, yes, I'm going to be there, then you make the phone call and say, hey, we're just following up to make sure you're going to be there. Or you can send a text or an email or something. But in the end, you need to call and confirm that appointment.
I was going to suggest the text as well. The CAs have access to internal text now, and that's been a huge game changer for us in playing phone tag. You just text them and say, call me when you're free, and then they call you when they're.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I love that. If you don't have a scheduled appointment and you need to get in touch with somebody, that idea of texting them and say, call me when you're free or will you be free at such and such a time. That was a great suggestion last week by Kyle. Tyler, did that answer your question?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Ebony, anything final before we sign off?
Yes, I'll make it quick. I really appreciate everybody sticking in, even though we're at this 8-week point. People may seem to be at, you know, different places in the process, but we're still in the process. So what I would say is, you know, progress is progress. And so thank you all for just hanging in. Thank you to Curtis and Rob and to Touchstone for your partnership. I feel like I'm making an acceptance speech. I don't mean for it to sound that way, but just thank you guys for sticking in there and recognizing that, you know, the process may take longer for some than others, but on the other side of this, I do believe it's going to be success and growth for all of you. So thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Ebony. Thanks everybody for being on. We look forward to talking next week.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Well, take care.
Thank you, guys.